My sister Dorothy, who was born 5 years after my birth, married Abraham Blumenthal 3 months after we were married. As explained previously, she put off her marriage a few months in order to avoid the picture from Terry Cohn.
Mm-hmm.
She had one daughter, Louise, who died quite young. I don't have to put in any more about Dorothy, do I? Okay.
She is living today, so your sister.
Oh, sure, right down the hall.
That's what we wanted to do. She lives right in this building.
Same building, yes.
That's what we wanted. Wasn't she active?
Very active.
Council? We'd like to hear about that.
One of the most active women the council has ever had.
Mm-hmm. Was she president at one time?
I don't think so. I don't remember. I don't think so. Do you know her personally?
I don't. I'm sorry to say
okay.
No.
How do you spell your name?
Fagan. F-A-I-G-E-N. F-A-I-G-E-N.
Write it down, because Dorothy wanted to know. She knows almost everybody in council. Okay.
Yes, now if you want to go into something about yourself, how it was to be young and healthy way back in the 1800s, and what school did you go to?
Well, all right. You want to start it now?
Yeah, mm-hmm. We're on tape.
Well, I mentioned that we lived on Denison Avenue next to Dr. Levy.
Right.
And you got there.
Right.
After moving to Squirrel Hill, I went to the new Whiteman School. It's closed now, you know.
But it still stands.
Yeah.
You mean it stands to this day?
Yeah. Yeah. It is closed. After finishing elementary school, I went to the Pittsburgh Central High School, which was above Pride Street in the Hill District. That school ranked with the finest in the country. Had a wonderful faculty. And I'm very proud to say that I graduated with honors.
Do you remember the year?
Yes, 1911, when I was 17 years old. I can still remember delivering an essay in Carnegie Music Hall at our graduation. The title of the essay was Reciprocity with Canada.
See how you can remember those things.
Yeah.
Was Fifth Avenue High School being built at that time, do you remember?
No, it was there.
It was there?
But it was, I think I went to Fifth, don't put this in, but I think I, at that time, there was a high school in Allegheny, a high school on the south side, and the Fifth Avenue High School, and that's all in the city of Pittsburgh.
Hmm. At that time, were you still attending Sunday school?
Yes. I was confirmed at the age of 16.
Mm-hmm. And important is, how were things in those days as far as being a Jew at this particular high school, as far as being Jewish in the area you live? Any recollections of how things were?
I can't remember any particular anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm. That's important.
I don't think... Don't forget that at that time, the members of the class were all sons or daughters of German Jews. And the anti-Semitism only became more apparent due to the immigration of thousands of Russian and Polish and Eastern European Jews. The members of my class in high school were Rouse, Ben Swingers, Louis Block, all people of old German families here. And so far as I can remember, they never suffered from any anti-Semitism. After graduating from high school, I had the idea that I wanted to be a chemist. So I went to Cornell as a freshman in the class of 1915. First year, I lived in private dormitory.
Private dormitory.
After which, I was taken in by a fraternity, Phi Epsilon Phi. You know that name at all? They're not. I don't think they're in existence. I think ZBT took them over. I was a little shrimp when I went to college. We had ROTC at that time, and I was in the smallest company. When I went back for my sophomore year, they put me in the next to largest company. I'd grown that much in one year, which was very fortunate.
What city was that college in?
Ithaca, New York.
Ithaca. And this is getting, approaching the World War, 1918, is that correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's right. After graduating in 1915 with a degree of Bachelor of Chemistry, I came back to Pittsburgh, and my first job was in the Mellon Institute, which at that time put the street for the Concordia Club is on there.
Bayard?
Bayard, which was at that time on Bayard Street.
Really?
Yeah. Our first work, Mellon Institute was originated in order to develop products for industry. And the first thing that I was put onto was trying to make aspirin.
Really?
There was no chemical or drug that I know of that was made in this country before the First World War. It was all imported from Germany. You know, the Bayer aspirin?
German.
After working there for a short time, I was sent to Youngstown, Ohio, to the Republic Steel Company, which had just installed new, furnaces. Used in gasification. And what the hell word do I want?
Big thing.
Ovens?
That's close. Ovens of some sort?
All right. New ovens.
Okay.
And I still remember that my job started at midnight.
Graveyard shift.
Graveyard shift. That's right. After that, I got a job with a chemical company in Burlington, New Jersey, where they were making the base for a product called dimethyl aniline, which was used in making typewriter ribbons and typewriter paper. That's another thing that we had to import from Germany. Then I went to Newark with the same company. This was about 1917. While working in Burlington, I got a letter from Pittsburgh that the sister of my best friend, Eleanor Goldsmith, was going to be in Philadelphia for a party, including a hayride. And I was invited also. And that was the first, up to that time, Eleanor had been the little sister of my friend, her brother. After the hayride, I realized that she was no longer just a little sister. A few months later, while I was working in Newark, she was invited to a wedding of a former campmate of hers. And fortunately for me, she had a free evening. And on that free evening, I spent a week's salary entertaining her. First, we went to either Sherry's, what's the other one? We'll just say Sherry's. We went to Sherry's for dinner. The menu was all in French. And I was able to show off my knowledge of French by ordering it from the French menu. By chance, when the dinner was over, I happened to turn over the menu and found that the whole thing was in English on the other side. After dinner, we went to see a play called The Jest with Lionel and... Lionel and John Barrymore. And after the play, we went up on the Astor roof for drinks and dancing. A few months after that, I went back to Pittsburgh and we became engaged. My first job in Pittsburgh was at a plant where they were going to try to make radium from the ore. But I wasn't there too long. The war had broken out, and Dr. Bacon of the Mellon Institute got together a group of chemists to go to Paris to start a laboratory, and I was included, although I was just a very young and inexperienced chemist. When we got to Paris, the main thing I remember of the trip over was that we were in a convoy. The convoy met in Halifax, Nova Scotia, in the middle of winter, when it was way below zero. And I can still remember on the trip across that we chemists enlisted to help as watchers at night, watch for submarines. That was quite an experience.
Was that 1918 or later?
1918. When we got to Paris, I lived in a pension near the Arc de Triomphe with a few other Americans. And I can still remember going out to the Etoile at night to watch the German planes come in and drop bombs. At that time, that was like firecrackers compared to what they did in the Second World War. My job, due to the fact that I could speak French to some extent, was buying equipment for the laboratory, which was in a suburb called Puteaux, P-U-T-E-A-U-X. And I had a driver in a motorcycle, in a sidecar, who took me all over the city to buy equipment. On one occasion, we were driving out to one of the suburbs, and I noticed people standing on the sidewalk, looking up in the air, pointing. And every once in a while, we'd hear an explosion. And had no idea what it was. Couldn't have been an attack in the daytime. The next morning, the Paris Matin had a complete article about the Big Bertha, which was a gun that the Germans had set up 50 miles away from Paris, and which fired at intervals, but fortunately, it couldn't be moved once it was set. So all the shells fell in a certain part of Paris, not in the part where we were living. My next job was in the, what they called the Defense Department of the Chemical Warfare Service, or gas service, which was training troops as they came over in the use of gas masks in order to protect them
Yes, this is very interesting. Were you in uniform at that time?
I was a second lieutenant.
That's important. And you were training them how to use gas masks?
Yes.
In other words, they were using gas at that time?
The Germans.
World War I.
They almost won the war with gas.
Mm-hmm.
I heard after I was there that if they had followed through after their first gas attack, they could have gone right through to the ocean. But fortunately, they didn't realize what they had done.
It was effective then.
Oh, very. There was no protection against it at all. On one occasion, I was sent up to the front lines in a quiet sector called the Samiel, Samihiel sector, where I saw how the troops were protecting themselves against gas. In the trenches where they slept, they had blankets hung in front of every sleeping place, saturated with a chemical in case of a gas attack. Mm-hmm. After that, I was sent to Tours, T-O-U-R-S, which was the headquarters of the gas service, as adjutant to the major in charge. And I had one very unusual experience. It seems that when any athletes wanted to join the army, they put them in the gas, in the chemical warfare service. So one day I was visited for assigning four very famous athletes to various divisions or regiments. They were Percy Haughton, the coach of the Harvard football team, Christy Mathewson, the great pitcher for the Giants, Ty Cobb, the greatest batter in baseball, and Jeff Rixey, a pitcher for the Cincinnati Reds. I had the job of assigning them. And unfortunately, I assigned Christy Mathewson to the wrong place because he got gassed and didn't live too long after that.
What was the purpose in assigning athletes?
They were supposed to be gas officers. In other words, a gas officer wanted to make sure that the troops were protected.
Mm-hmm.
When troops came over from this country to France, one of the first things to induct them was to take them into a little building, a little hut, and they were told to wear their gas masks when they went in, and then after they went in, they were told to take their gas masks off because there was gas in the hut to give them an idea of what it was like. It wasn't a real poisonous gas, fortunately. And we gave them instructions and we gave them lectures about it. I can still remember an occasion when a couple of the people I was lecturing fainted. I must have been pretty...
You made your point.
Yeah. While I was in tour, there was one place near there called Louvre, where a very famous wine came from. And on a trip later, many years later, my wife and I went to the caves at Louvre to remember where I had been during the war. During that time, people, French and American both, were dying like flies from the flu. That was the great flu epidemic of 1918. And I escaped. And I've never had flu. And I think I'm immune to it.
Was that epidemic all over the world? Wasn't it here, too, in the United States? And it was in Europe at the same time?
Yep. That was one of the worst epidemics the world has ever known.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now, after the war was over and after I came back, we got married on June 2nd, 1919. I had no job as a chemist. I had no job of any kind. So my father-in-law, who was in the wholesale tobacco business, gave me a job in his stogie factory. And I started at the bottom.
Would you describe a stogie? Do they still make stogies today?
Yes.
What is it?
A stogie is a cigar. The name came from Conestoga wagon. The drivers of the Conestoga wagon, I think, picked up tobacco in Lancaster County on their way west and rolled their own. And they were called Conestogas and later stogies. A stogie is different from a cigar in that it's thinner and made out of different tobacco. The filler comes from near Dayton, Ohio, and it's called Dutch because the seed originally is supposed to have come from the Dutch East Indies. The wrapper and the binder, which have to go around the filler, came from Connecticut. And after I'd been with the company for some years, we used to go to Connecticut to buy tobacco. And the man who was head of the Tobacco Growers Association at that time was named Joseph Alsop, who was the father of the two, Stewart and what's the other one's name?
Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
Where my wife and I got very friendly with the Alsops, who were really in very high society in a suburb of Hartford called Avon. For instance, when on one occasion when we were there, we were introduced to Lady So-and-so, one of their English friends. Mrs. Alsop was a niece of Teddy Roosevelt.
Then the Alsops were not Jewish.
Oh, no. No, I should say not.